Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park in this morning, and we're going to talk about Memorial Day in the area, and also what was going on 162 years ago at this time in this area. Mary O'Neill and Ryan Quint here from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Good to see you guys.
Morning, Ted.
It's great to see you too.
I always look forward to. I'm sure you don't look forward to the fact that this is the spring is really busy for you with all the things that happened. But this is sort of the beginning of the season for the park. For programs, it seems you have a lot of programs at the end of the year in December with the Battle of Fredericksburg, and then we get into things in the spring. So it's good to see you and have you guys in. We're going to get into next weekend and Memorial Day because there are just a ton of things going on, and we'll talk about the Luminaria, which is such a popular thing. But I'll start with you, Ryan. 162 years ago, there was a lot of fighting. Bloody Angle, was just the other day. That was just horrific. 20 some hours of just really hand to hand combat on the Spotsylvania battlefield.
Yeah, I mean the Battle of Spotsylvania started on May 8th. So by May 12th, which is when the fighting at the Bloody Angle or the Mule Shoe Salient took place, both armies had been duking it out for almost a week now. Soldiers are tired, they're exhausted, their adrenaline's running out, but the fighting continues. And then even after the Bloody Angle, like let's use today's example, May 14th, the armies were continuing to fight along the Courthouse Road. So Spotsylvania Courthouse is a different animal than a lot of these soldiers are used to. Even soldiers who fight at Fredericksburg or Gettysburg or Antietam, Spotsylvania is a different beast. There's a Union officer who fought at Antietam and Gettysburg, and actually afterwards received the Medal of Honor for the Battle of Antietam. And he says that those two battles were child's play compared to Spotsylvania, which is just crazy to think about. This guy who has been in it and says, well, those two things really weren't much compared to Spotsylvania Courthouse, which is, I think, speaks to the ferocity of the combat.
Oh, it does. And when you read about it and you hear the stories, you just can't. It's hard to imagine that length of time, and it was raining, but just the bodies on the field and how it just never seemed to end.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think that's why as we get into this concept of Memorial Day, these bodies and these men were buried very haphazardly. Some of the soldiers who died in the trenches, those trenches were just pushed on top of them, and that's what created these kind of impromptu burial mounds. And so it's crazy because if you go to the Bloody Angle today, right, part of the park, it's quiet, you've got birds chirping. And so it's this kind of duality of the power of place, of these horrific events 160 plus years ago now lead to these quiet places of reflection. You're probably going to be there by yourself most days. And so you just have a place to kind of close your eyes and think about what happened at these places that are quite literally in our backyards.
I remember walking along with Frank O'Reilly in a program a couple of years ago, and we walked the battlefield, and I didn't realize just the topography on that battlefield where things are. You just can't see things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are what are called swales. There are divots. And so Union and Confederate soldiers could be anywhere between 50 to 100 yards from each other and not know it until they are quite literally on top of each other, which leads to some pretty horrific hand-to-hand combat. You know, if you have a musket that can only be fired 20 or 30 seconds, you don't have time to reload. And so soldiers use camp hatchets. They use bayonets. They use their hands, whatever they can. And so that's what's going to lead to some pretty horrific fighting at places like the Bloody Angle.
You talked, Ryan, about the soldier who talked about how bad it was. It would seem like those that did survive that, boy, I don't know how do you go home and, you know, resume life?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and there have been some really good books published about that very concept. But I think it's so interesting that Spotsylvania it doesn't really have the big reunions that like a place like Gettysburg had on the 50th anniversary of the battle. Some veterans would come back for sure, and they would put their monuments down. But there was never a really big, hey, let's come together and think about the battle. There were many soldiers who were more than willing to leave Spotsylvania in the rearview mirror and say, you know, I never want to see that place ever again.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that is that and I never thought about that. That you don't see pictures or hear about reunions where you do with some of these other battlefields. You don't.
Right. And again, some veterans came back in these little smaller groups, and they would put monuments to their specific unit or whatever the case may be. But yeah, for a lot of guys, once they leave here, they're done. They're not coming back.
Before we get out of this, we'll talk a little bit more about what happened, because this was kind of in this area. Once they leave, they finally leave, and all, you know, whether it's Fredericksburg or Wilderness or Chancellorsville, this is kind of the end in 1864. But we'll get into all that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. We're gonna take a break and come back and talk about Memorial Day next weekend, and especially the Luminaria, that is such a huge event that we'll get into. Ryan Quinn and Mary O'Neill from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Hear more coming up on News Talk 1230. WFVA.
It's the only local talk show in Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform to hear Town Talk anytime, 24/7, 365. And now, Ted Schubel.
Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park here this morning. Mary O'Neill and Ryan Quint here to talk about things. And again, next weekend is the Luminaria that we're going to jump into. But I'll ask both of you, when we talk about, you know, what happened after the horrific battles, Mary, and you guys have done programs with of making sure that officers got pensions and things like that. There were a lot of things that the people that fought in these battles then really started to advocate for after the war.
Yeah, absolutely. After the war, I think today there's some things that we sort of take for granted, that we have an infrastructure to support people who fought in wars afterwards, that we have an infrastructure to take care of the dead. But that didn't exist during the Civil War. It's something that, yes, these veterans coming home from battle and still grappling with what happened started really to advocate for in the war's aftermath. And some of those things became better pensions, making sure that the families of fallen soldiers were taken care of in some way, shape, or form. And then one of the other big outcomes from that kind of advocacy was the National Cemetery system, and the idea that it is the responsibility of the federal government to take care of all of the soldiers who died and who perished in the conflict. And out of that, we have a National Cemetery system being formed. And the Fredericksburg National Cemetery is a part of that wider system. Today, there are 14 national cemeteries that the Park Service takes care of. Those are just the ones the Park Service takes care of. So the Fredericksburg National Cemetery is established shortly after the conflict. And it is, I think, one of the ways to think of the cemetery. It's one of the first, really the first place that the park... It's the oldest place in the park where people were memorializing and thinking about the memory of the Civil War before people were preserving battlefields. They were establishing these cemeteries and going to them and visiting them, and they were places of remembrance very early on in the conflict, and that's something that we carry through to today. They are still places of remembrance and places to reflect on what happened in the Civil War. And also the Fredericksburg National Cemetery is an active national cemetery for soldiers and veterans well beyond the Civil War. It closes in World War II.
Oh, okay. So it's not everybody there isn't necessarily associated with Civil War conflict around here.
Oh, certainly. The majority of them are. The Fredericksburg National Cemetery is over 15,000 burials, not necessarily gravestones. There are some grouped graves, especially from the Civil War era, yeah. Since there were unknowns who were reinterred after the conflict and grouped together. But there are also soldiers from the Spanish-American War. There are soldiers from World War I. There's a small number from World War II. And then there's also some spouses and children of those servicemen members.
And most of the people buried there, we don't know who they are, isn't it?
That is,
unfortunately.
Is correct. Yeah, over 12,000. It's about 87% are unknown. And most of those are the Civil War burials. But it's humbling to think about. It is hard to wrap your head around being in the cemetery, being in that space. Like Ryan said, like the Spotsylvania battlefield, there are places you go, and today they are beautiful places. Mm-hmm. They're quiet. There's birds in the trees. In a busy area, it's lovely to have the space you can go to and experience that quiet. But it's also really hard to wrap your head around the fact that there are so many people who are buried there who fought for this country, and also that so many of them are unknown.
No, and when you see the markers, when you see the markers with the numbers, and it tells you, you know, how many are buried in that particular place. You just see how horrific it was, and how people couldn't be identified, and they just were, you know, put into graves like that.
Oh yeah, no, and I think every day when visitors come in, that's something that people ask a lot about, because you know. These cemeteries are not everywhere for a lot of folks coming in. When you see those little square markers in the ground with two numbers, the first number is like an ID for that grave, and then the bottom number is the number of people who are there. It never fails to sort of catch people off guard, and you know, about just how tragic the war was to so many people and to so many families, and that each individual one of those unknown burials represents someone who didn't come home, whose parents never saw them again, or whose kids never saw them again.
And you all see this, Mary, in a lot of ways, just with family members who do come, who knew that they had either had a relative who fought here, or they had a relative who fought and died here. And I'm sure there are many that in some cases assume they don't know where they were buried, and that they might be there and come and see if they can find out any information.
Oh, absolutely. That's very common. People who have ancestors who died in one of the battles that we manage will frequently, you know, come in looking for where their ancestor is buried, and there are many times when we have to say we don't know for sure. It's likely they could be one of these unknown burials. It's possible. But it's even today, not having that closure can be hard for people.
Yeah. No, and I think sometimes we just take it for granted. We know where the – I drive by the cemetery coming into the city. Or, you know, I drive by there. Especially with anniversaries, you run into people – that have saved money to come out here from all around the country, and they wanted, you know, one time come out here and just see where they had an ancestor, you know, fight and or die.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's always, it's amazing that we exist today to try to help those people learn about their ancestors. And I think it's really a learning process between us and the visitors, and it goes both ways because people come and we can show them battle maps, we can try to explain the experience of their ancestors on the battlefield, and then we've also often had people come and they will show us things like photos of their ancestor from, you know, before the war, during the war, or sometimes they have letters, and that kind of personal material is one of the cemetery stops that we did last year was during the Luminaria. We have interpreters in the cemetery at individual graves telling the stories of those graves. Last year, one of the stops that we did was almost and exclusively provided by the information came from the family that had presented us with some letters and photos just a few weeks before the actual Luminaria happened.
To get some of that would be just like gold. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've done, Ryan, you on a lot of times with the Luminaria have done programs of where you research and tell stories. I remember, I think you did one last year, I think.
Yes.
It's really interesting stuff.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. So what I try to do is I try to find, you know, people who may not, I try to do someone different every year. And by doing that, doing research on the different letters that they may or may not have written home. For example, this year, the person I'll be talking about is a man named Thomas Norton. He was from Pennsylvania. He wasn't killed in one of the four major battles. He's actually killed in a small skirmish in April 1862, right as Fredericksburg is about to fall to the U.S. Army for the first time. And so a lot of the research I'm getting is from his widow's pension. So his widow applied for a pension and got some money after the war based off the services of Thomas Norton. And then John Washington, who was an enslaved man in Fredericksburg and left a very vivid memoir, talks about watching Norton's first funeral in Falmouth at the Union Church up on the Heights. So John Washington, an enslaved man who was liberated by the arrival of the U.S. Army and liberated, quite frankly, by the death of Thomas Norton, talks about watching this funeral, and he takes the time to pay his respects. And after the war, Norton and another comrade, a man named Patrick Devlin, were removed to the National Cemetery. So they are quite literally the first two to die in the fighting around Fredericksburg. And now today they're surrounded by 15,000 of their comrades who would die after.
Those kind of stories that you do, it makes you realize that everyone there has a story, and they're just like it's not just names, that they're just like us.
Yeah, absolutely. The way I think of it as if we think about the cemetery as about 12 or 13% known individuals, that means there are about 2,700 known people. So if we did 10 people a year on average, it would take us 270 years to tell everybody's story.
Wow. What a great visual that is.
Yeah.
It shows you how many are there.
Exactly, and unfortunately, how many that we don't know, right? And so we always try, every year we try to at least have one stop dedicated to the unknowns. Why are they unknown? What was the process like? Because we want to pay respect to those individuals who might not have an identified grave, but whose story is still extremely important to tell.
And I think just the fact that there are so many and it's such a moving experience to be in the cemetery, and especially when it gets dark. As it gets dark, it can be moving. But when it becomes, if you've never done it, be there when it's totally dark.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's usually, for the Luminaria, I guess I'll actually briefly describe the Luminaria for any folks who may not have ever done
please.
It before. So the Luminaria in the cemetery, the largely Boy Scouts do an amazing job of placing these Luminaria candles, like the candles in the little white bags, that become very visible and illuminated at night. And they place one for every individual buried in the cemetery there. So there's more bags than there are actual headstones. So it's over 15,000 of these Luminaria bags that are on every single headstone, mm-hmm. lining all the walkways around the Humphreys Monument in the middle of the cemetery. And it just being there at night, yes, when the sun goes down, which usually is around, we open the gates at 8 o'clock. It's usually a little bit light still. By 9:30, it's starting to get really dark. You just get, it's a sense of awe for the scale of the cemetery and the scope of what is of what is there, and it's a community event. We have lots of people, thousands of people will come to the Luminaria. I think it's a community event, you know, where we can all collectively reflect on and remember and honor the service of these individuals.
There's nothing like walking up the hill when it's dark and to all of a sudden get to the top of the hill and just look out with all the candles. It is just something.
Oh yeah.
And I'm sure for, like Ryan, for you, that when you research these people, it just gives you, the stories that are told, and that's why it's good to come and spend some time and listen to some of these stories, because you do see everyone comes from such diverse backgrounds and they all have stories just like we all do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it personalizes it. Right? Yeah. I think for so many people, it's easy to think of the Civil War as a Robert E. Lee or a U.S. Grant or an Abraham Lincoln, right? These black and white photographs. But the average fighting soldier of the Civil War, regardless of side, North or South, was about 24, 25 years old. They were a farmer. Many of them had never left home before. And so this is a chance to humanize that aspect of the conflict and to think about these people as humans, as simple as that might sound, and the fact that they had emotions and they loved and they were loved. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, even if you just tell their story for 5 minutes to a group of 5 or 10 or 15 people, it's for 5 minutes you're remembering what they were doing. And then on to that, you know, every half hour, a bugler plays taps, which I think adds to the ambiance of the event. But yeah, I think it's a fitting way to set some time aside every year to think about what this cemetery on the hill means for the not just Fredericksburg, but the greater nation as well. And then you think about the same thing, you know, there are national cemeteries in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and in Gettysburg, and Sharpsburg, Maryland, and, you know, this conflict is far-reaching for sure.
The Luminaria is Saturday nights beginning at 8 o'clock is when everyone starts coming in. And it goes to what, 11?
Yeah, it goes to 11. As far as like logistics for the Luminaria, because it is such a big event, there's a trolley provided. We provide a trolley to transport people from the University of Mary Washington parking lot to the entrance of the cemetery where the Fredericksburg Battlefield Visitor Center is. There is the parking lot behind the visitor center is reserved for accessible parking. Okay. And we also have a small fleet of golf carts to help transport people up the hill. If anyone needs help transporting up the hill, we've got a fleet of them to facilitate access so that everyone can get up there.
Mary O'Neill is here this morning. Ryan Quinn is here from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Luminaria is next Saturday night, beginning at 8 o'clock at the National Cemetery. We're going to continue to talk about Memorial Day in Fredericksburg when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:32.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
It is Memorial Day, and the events with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park are focused this morning with Ryan Quint and Mary O'Neill with the Fredericksburg and in Spotsylvania National Military Parks. If Mary, you did a great job of just all the logistics, and if you've never done it, I mean that this is just one of the things in this area on Memorial Day that you want to do, the Luminaria on Saturday night. And in a lot of cases, you plan on having to walk. It's like going to the Christmas parade. You're going to probably have to do a little bit of walking. But boy, it is just a moving event and the kind of thing that you'll never forget.
Oh, absolutely. It's a unique event. It's something that is so hard to convey in words, the scale and impact of it, without actually being there. And that we have, you know, that we have the cemetery. I think that the region and the country experienced so much struggle, you know, in order for the cemetery to be here is evidence of the war and the devastation of the war. But the fact that we have it here and that we can take advantage of our, you know, local resource, which is this amazing national cemetery that is very unique, and you can experience this event, and is just, I think, really, it's an honor, and it's, I don't have the words to describe. And I think that just speaks to the volume of the visual impact of the event, is that it's when people have gone there, we've had people attend who haven't been before, who are always just shocked, because there are so many people who, you know, we take it for granted. You pass that hill every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard or easy to forget what's at the top of that hill, because you can't see it from the street.
And you all do such a good job, and I am always saying and bragging about you guys. That, I mean, I think there is no better Park Service group than what we have here. But for people who are like, well, I'm not really interested in history and that kind of thing, it's so much more than history. You all tell stories and do so much research based on letters and diaries and all that kinds of things.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to think about it, that, you know, I think if your idea of history is very, you know, from a textbook and someone lecturing at you,
this
and
happened here, this
dates,
and this,
and I
sure.
think, you know, going to something like the Luminaria, and you're hearing stories. It's and everyone can relate to these stories, and you can relate to the people behind the stories and know who they were. Like Ryan was saying earlier, they're real people, and you can connect with them. And we do go through to great lengths to ensure that, you know, the stories that we are telling, that people can connect to them on an emotional level. It's not, you're not going to go up there and hear lectures meant for, you know, a dusty hall. This is, you know, most of the interpretive stations that we have, for the most part, we're talking for 5 to 10 minutes, but there's multiple of them throughout the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
So as an experience, you know, you experience the Luminaria, that visual impact, being with the community in the space, and then being in the community with the space with some of the people who are buried there, really kind of coming alive.
Oh yeah, you hear the stories, and you realize the pain that the families went through, and just the unknown, and just what happened there. That's what it all makes. And as Ryan mentioned, the every half hour playing taps, everybody's moving along, and then everybody for how long the taps goes just stops, and it's so silent and just still.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard, like you said. It's hard to put it into words, and even pictures. Never, there are always some great pictures that come out of the Luminaria, but even pictures don't do it justice. So that's why being there.
Yeah, absolutely. We encourage everyone to come. The gates are open. It's the only night of the year where the cemetery is open at night.
That's right.
Which is kind of just a special thing.
Yeah.
As well. But yeah, the gates are open 8 to 11 p.m.
and I don't think we've mentioned, it's free.
It is free.
It is free.
Even if you take the trolley from the William Street parking lot, that's free. So, you know, you don't have to pay anything if you want to come out.
That's Saturday. Monday on actual Memorial Day is the Park Service highlights Memorial Day also.
Oh yes, absolutely. So within the cemetery on Monday, May 25th, we're going to be doing a small ceremony, probably about 15 minutes, just kind of introductory ceremony. There will be the 23rd United States Colored Troops Living History Group. They present the colors, and it's just a quiet, solemn ceremony. And then throughout the day there, that's at 10 o'clock, throughout the day until about 4 o'clock, we'll have rangers in the cemetery, some interactive activities that kind of facilitate remembrance and honoring the service of those lost in the cemetery. So that's a much quieter event, but also I think looking at the heart of what Memorial Day is, what Memorial Day is about. I think everyone, you know, when folks have the day off and it's kind of a vacation day, there's celebrations and barbecues, and the quiet ceremony in the cemetery on Memorial Day is an opportunity to step out for a few minutes and just remember why Memorial Day exists.
Yeah. It's always good, and again to be there and to hear some of the stories. It is. It's a good way of just not treating it as a day off. So that will begin at 10 o'clock on Monday.
That will begin at 10 o'clock on Monday. And we will also have the golf carts available on Monday for folks if we need to facilitate access up the hill.
Okay.
Yeah.
And again, you can find out all this information if you go to the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park Facebook page. Has all kinds of updated information.
Yeah, so our Facebook page, as well as nps.gov, the park website has this information as well.
Couple of things. I'm going to ask you this, Ryan, right off the top, and then I know you can do it. I wouldn't do this to many people, but I know you can do it. And one of the reasons you're able to put on, you all are able to put on the programs that you do is because of the diaries and the letters. You put on what I consider, would it be one of my top five Park Service programs over the years? A few years ago, you did one on the mail service during the Civil War. It was fascinating, just the number of letters and mail that they were able to deliver during the war.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. The U.S. Army of the Potomac, which is the U.S. Army that fights in the Fredericksburg area, on average sent and received 1 million letters a month. There's about 125,000 soldiers in the Army, so that's give or take 10 letters per soldier per month. Multiply that over the course of the war, and you've got hundreds of millions of letters across the entire conflict. It's a fascinating, if not maddening, amount of research, because when it comes to the Civil War, if you have a research interest, I can almost guarantee you there is somebody out there, a soldier or a civilian or somebody who was writing about it. And those letters might be in archives. Those letters might have been digitized, which is also a really cool part of being a historian in 2026, is the digitization of materials.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to these archives anymore. I still would recommend it because it's really cool. But they're digitizing. They're making available all of these letters and diaries and journals and newspapers. So again, if you have an interest in something to do with the Civil War, I'm willing to bet you can find somebody from the time period writing about that thing. And why it's so easy to say, you know, why would you come and listen to me, you know, someone who in 2026, or you can come and listen to people whose words were written in and around the moment.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said about, just for a second, forgetting that we know the end of the story, right? Forget that we know how it ends, and just be in the moment with these individuals who went through every day not knowing how it ends, and that uncertainty and that fear and that anxiety, let that come through, I think is also really powerful.
Well, and as Mary mentioned, just getting when you get new information, when somebody comes in and says, don't know if you'd be interested in this, or someone you come across something that you hadn't seen. Another thing around here that I think is one of the more powerful places is the visitor center at Chancellorsville, the room that has all the pictures of a lot of the Civil War soldiers, and you walk away from that and you're just taken by how young they all are. And you just look at that and you just think, everything with this war, these were all people that had the same emotions and feelings that we all have.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the human emotions don't change a whole lot. The years might change, but the emotions we feel are the same, whether it's 1862 or whether it's 1776, right? Here we are in the middle of the 250th anniversary of the country. Those emotions run the gamut. And I think that's what, for me personally, that's what makes history so interesting, is it's taking that notion of, okay, kids, today we're going to memorize the presidents. Sure. Or we can talk about the individuals who lived it, experienced it, went through it. And that's what I think is so fascinating.
So you and I started talking when we started the show about that this week there was the bloody angle, and there was all kinds of fighting going on in Spotsylvania. There had been so much if you go back even a few years. You had the Battle of Fredericksburg, then you had Chancellorsville and Wilderness, and then again Spotsylvania, and then eventually the armies finally left for the last time.
Yeah, so the armies finally leave kind of Spotsylvania County proper towards the latter half of May 1864. They left behind 18 months of conflict. They left behind battlefields. They left behind cemeteries. They left behind a devastated landscape. And it's going to take the civilians of Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania County and Caroline County and Orange County and Stafford County to start to pick up the pieces. And, you know, for the town of Fredericksburg, You gotta recover from that. When the war ends, there are still federal troops present, right? Now we're in a period known as Reconstruction.
Yeah.
You have the experiences of tens of thousands of formerly enslaved, now freed people. What's life gonna look like for them? And so this is what we like to remind people, is that yes, we are a Civil War battlefield park, but we don't just talk bullets and cannons. We talk about the befores, the afters, the whys, the why nots. And so you have this kind of reconstruction, both physically and metaphorically, of the region.
Yeah. No, and you even now you go through town and you can see buildings that are impacted and still, and you hear. We've done shows in talking about how it took Stafford and Spotsylvania, you know, into the 60s and, you know, the 1960s, of, you know, to recover economically from a lot of this. So this really did play a big part in so many areas of our lives around here.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll take a quick break and come back and wrap this up by talking again about what is going to happen on Memorial Day weekend, the Luminaria, and the program on Monday at the National Cemetery. Ryan Quitt, Mary O'Neill here with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. Mary O'Neill and Ryan Quinn. You guys have both done the Luminary and all in Memorial Day in Fredericksburg for years. Hey, Mary, you said it great when you said it. Just, it's hard to describe. You can't really describe it. But again, to be in the cemetery, it's one of those. Just to be able to take it all in. It's if you live around here or if you have company here, you ought to come and see it on Memorial Day weekend on that Saturday.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a unique experience. It's such a special thing to take part in this community event. And it is the whole community. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes hundreds of scouts to help set up, to light the luminarias, and then to be in the space of reflection and experience that with, you know, all of your neighbors in the broadest sense is just such a special thing that we just, it's an honor to facilitate it. So Luminaria is going to be Saturday the 23rd, 8 to 11 p.m. The gates are open. Everyone is welcome in. It is a free event. We'll have interpreters telling stories of the soldiers scattered throughout the cemetery, a bugler playing taps every half hour. And yes, come when you can, stay for as long as you like, and just be with all of our neighbors. It is having this experience.
It is. There's something about that too, of just being there with so many people and everyone kind of awed at the same time. And really, to take in a couple of the programs is good too. It gives context to what you're looking at.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we sometimes take advantage of the fact that, oh, it's the cemetery. It's been there. You know, you drive around that curve and you go off onto Lafayette or you go off onto Route 3. But for a few hours on Saturday and for a little while on Monday, stop, think about what this place actually means.
And the fact that so many in that cemetery are, we don't know who they are. And that puts it at a whole nother level.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, Mary, on Monday, 10 o'clock at the cemetery, there'll be a small program, and then you can there will be things throughout the day on Monday.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Small observance, small ceremony at 10 a.m. on Monday, and then we'll have staff posted in the cemetery throughout the day. We'll have some commemorative activities to sort of encourage and prompt reflection in the space. We'll have our standard walking tours of the Sunken Road at 10:30 and 2 on Monday. So, yeah, whether you're, you know, off for the day, you have a little bit of time, or want to, you know, bring family, friends who are in town and spend a more significant chunk of time at the area, we'll have things for people to do.
I don't have to convince you to, but I'm always saying to people, this is where we live. There's the history is so such a big part of this, and especially right now with we talk about not just colonial America, but the Civil War defined this area in so many ways, and a lot of people just dream of coming out here, and we live here, so. This is a great opportunity to take it in and see the good work that the Park Service does in this area.
Oh yeah, you mentioned right now, and Ryan mentioned it's the 250th of the United States. It's a time to reflect on, you know, the entirety of the history of the nation, and the Civil War, you know, is certainly represents a continuation of the ideas and ideals that people were discussing and debating in 1776 through to the Civil War and through to today.
8 o'clock on Saturday night, on next Saturday, Saturday the 23rd is the luminary at the National Cemetery, 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, or Monday morning. On Memorial Day will be the program at the National Cemetery. Thank you both for what you do, Mary O'Neill, Ryan Quint. You and others will be busy for the next week or so. So thank you for what you do, and the programs. We'll get together sometime when History at Sunset schedule comes out and talk about that too. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is it. Thanks for listening. We will see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.